This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Live your best life.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
It's Afternoons with me, Helen Farmer, and we've been speaking to Celia Vernick, founder of The Savvy Space, which offers home organising services to help you declutter and find some long-term solutions to the chaos in your life. And we also got a chance to ask up to a real-life Indian matchmaker with decades of experience how she manages to pair people up with more than 1,000 people on her books over the last few years. She's got a few success stories to share.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Now, we are perhaps spending more time at home than ever before, certainly over the last few months, and many of us having a bit of a belated spring clean, or perhaps if we're not, we should be. Joining us on the line now to tell us how we can declutter in style is Celia Vernick from The Savvy Space. Celia, how are you?
Hi, I'm great, thanks. How about you?
Yeah, really good, except I'm a bit concerned that our conversation is going to have me itching to go home and sort out cupboards that, well, they probably should have been dealt with when we moved house, but I'm sure like many of your clients here in Dubai, we could all be doing a bit better on the organisation front. Can you tell us a little bit about the home organising services that you offer? It's all about decluttering an organisation, but what is the kind of the meaning and message behind it? Where did the idea come from?
Sure, yeah. So I kind of got thinking about it after having moved abroad. I had moved around quite a bit and came to really appreciate how having an organized home can make a huge difference in your life. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something as simple as reducing stress and just creating like an environment that has you stress-free and supports the life you want. And it's something I've loved to do. And I realize a lot of people don't love it.
No, I don't.
Right? Surprised me. And they don't know where to start, or maybe they just don't have time for it. And so I felt like I had an opportunity to kind of help people with those solutions so that they could figure out the benefits of having a stress-free home and how that can really improve your life. So that kind of got me going with the business.
Yeah. Can you talk us through the process? You know, how do you work with clients in their home and what ultimately are you working towards?
Sure. So usually when people reach out to me, it's something like, I'm just so sick of the mess in my house. I can't find things. I just need my space to work because it's stressing me out. And a lot of times organizers out there will just come and tidy up your space, which is great. But then a few weeks or a few months on the line, you kind of feel like things are starting to get sloppy. And before you know it, you're kind of back to where you started, because it's really about so much more than tidying up. So when I work on a project, usually my aim is to understand really exactly what's happening in the space, not just what's in there or how much clutter, but how it got to that point, and trying to figure out, okay, what are the struggles? What are the goals for that space? So that as we work through it, we can really just cut the clutter and cut the noise and put together something that really works for the space and fits the lifestyle client and it's easy to maintain. So when people first reach out, we'll do a free, you know, no obligation consultation, like a 30-minute Zoom call, just to understand the project and your budget. And then every project starts with a decluttering and defining session. So we come to your house and work one-on-one to just process everything in your space, categorize it, give it a home that makes sense, so that by the time you're done, you feel like you've really regained control of that space and made sense of it. So you know exactly what's in there and hopefully just feel lighter overall.
It's interesting you mentioned there about kind of how people get to this place, Celia, because I think there must be a lot of psychology about what you do, whether you realize it or your clients realize it at the time.
Certainly there is. There's a lot that goes behind clutter and the reason that people hang on to it, whether it's sentimental, whether it's guilt over the cost or something they think they should be doing. There's definitely quite a bit of psychology that goes into it.
Can I ask you, this is a personal question, if you think it can go too far? My husband is absolutely ruthless when it comes to getting rid of things that we no longer need. As soon as the kids are getting a little bit older, he's like, right, well, we don't need that anymore. You know, get out of the house. And I feel like, you know, his desk is a little bit like American Psycho. It's like no one has ever been there. And his car. Do you think he can go too far in the other direction? Just so I've got something to discuss with him tonight over dinner.
Sure, definitely. I mean, there is too far, right? I mean, because you can't be left totally without. But when you're kind of debating that point, I feel like an easy question to ask is, can it easily be replaced? Can you borrow it if you really need it? Can you substitute it with something? And if the answer is yes, then it's okay to let go of. But if the answer is no, then it's probably something that you want to hang on to. And so that's kind of a good way to tell if you've gone too far.
Okay, I will put that to him. Thank you so much. And I just wondered, sometimes it can feel like a massively insurmountable task. And maybe that is because you're relocating, you're moving, or things have just been taking over a little bit over time. Where can people start? Because sometimes the task just feels like too much and, you know, why bother in the first place? If we've only got a short amount of time, Sally, what's the best way of taking on that clutter?
I would say start small. Pick something maybe in a personal space so you can control what's going on. You don't have people trampling in and out. So something like a nightstand or maybe your pajamas. And just start small and maybe set like a 10-minute timer and just see what you can do. And if you knock it out in 10 minutes, great. If not, then you can just come back tomorrow, do what you can, and then keep repeating that until it's done. And that'll really start to add up to a lot of big results, and you'll feel that momentum, and it'll give you the power to keep going and maybe start tackling bigger and bigger projects.
You sent over some of the kind of the most commonly asked questions you get from clients. I find this really interesting. One of them is it better to hang or fold clothes? Good question. So what when it comes to wardrobes, to closet space, what do you generally advise?
Yeah, that's definitely the age-old super common question. I would recommend always prioritizing drawer space for more slippery clothes like athletic wear or pajamas or swimwear, because those things are really hard to keep looking nice on a shelf, right? Versus something like jeans or sweaters where they tend to just hold their shape better. But for sweaters in particular, it's good to fold them because oftentimes when there's delicate fabrics, the shoulders can get stretched when you hang them. So outside of that, it kind of just depends on what you have space for and what's going to be the easiest thing for you to maintain. I mean, my husband, for example, abhors folding. So I always hang as much of his clothing as possible so that he's more likely to actually put them away.
But I think that's probably very true, actually. People have a different approach and, you know, different comfort level and have different types of spaces as well. Have you ever had to have some difficult conversations with a client when it comes to getting rid of something that you feel like they just do not need?
Certainly, yeah. I've seen quite a few clients struggle with sentimental objects, you know, being handed down from a family member or a gift from a friend that really wasn't their style that they felt bad getting rid of. And I would say that if it's something that's not being used, if it's just shoved in the back of a closet, then it's not really doing anyone any good or being treated with the respect it deserves. So it can be a hard conversation, but I usually just try to point out, you know, let's make sure this item is used and appreciated, and donating it to a friend or charitable foundation is a good way to go. Or if it's something from the family, you can still keep it in the family by seeing if maybe a sibling wants it.
Now, I first saw your work on the Instagram page of a friend of mine, Emily, whose kitchen cupboards are now a thing of absolute beauty. My goodness, it was me, Monica from Friends would just be in absolute awe of her kitchen cupboards. And one of the techniques you use is kind of clear containers that you can then write what those things, and basically decanting a lot of things you'd bring home from the supermarket into containers that fit together, that are easy to display, easy to grab. Can you tell us a little bit around kitchen cupboards, some of the hacks we might need to know?
Well, it's really all about visibility. So you want to be able to see everything at a glance, especially when you're about to leave for the grocery store, right? And you want to know what do you need and what don't you. But also so that things don't get lost in the back of the cabinet and you end up buying another, you know, two boxes of pasta when you've already had 10. So visibility is the most important thing, which is why I usually suggest clear bins, labels. Label, label, label. You can never over-label something. In one project I did, we actually labeled pots, pans, baking trays, just to make sure that they always stayed in their place. I mean, because otherwise it gets sloppy, right? And you want to make sure that you can see everything. So certainly visibility. Turntables are my new favorite hack, I would say. You know, the Lazy Susan? That's great for seasonings, for example, because, again, when you have just like a lot of little things in a cabinet, you have to fish through to find, you know, the oil or the vinegar in the back. But with a turntable, you just kind of turn it around and easily can get to anything that you need.
Where are you getting them from? This is my question, because I'm doing a Friday Zoom cookery class, and one of the couples that is on the class has Lazy Susans. I'm like, I love a Lazy Susan. Where can you get a little one for organization? Any insider information, Celia?
Yeah, sure. There's a few places. Homesmith is usually my go-to. They have a lot of different sizes. and shapes and color variations if you're particular about the style. So Homesmiths is a great resource, but you can also check out Home Center or Homebox. I've seen a couple there.
So we're going to go to the text line. Franz has been in touch saying paperwork. Where should I keep my marriage certificate and what about mortgage documents?
Ah, okay. So when it comes to paperwork, I usually recommend all things to be in the same place. So you want one secure place if you have a home office or even really important papers like a marriage certificate can't be replaced, right? I mean, you could have a copy, but you'll never replace the original. So if you have a safe, that's great. Any sort of secure archiving system where you keep them is good. As long as it's not a safe, for example, with a battery operated access, like one we used to have, because if you hear that fire alarm in your building and you need to get out quickly and those batteries are dead, it's not a good situation.
My goodness. Oh my goodness. I can't even imagine, actually. That makes me feel ill. Okay. Good tip there. So the thing about paperwork is that we never really know, or maybe we do, what we're going to need and when. How much paperwork do you honestly have in your house? Are you very much a kind of scan and shred, or have you got things filed, Celia?
We're very much scan. I'm big into the digital just so that I don't have to carry it. And that's probably a result of having moved around quite a bit. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to have to pay to move boxes of paperwork when you could just house them on a backup drive. So, yeah, they're very much scanning into it. And then when it comes to folders and storing them digitally, I kind of have like an act now, act soon, and then archive. So anything, whether it's physical on your desk or on your computer, those are sort of the three categories that I tend to put things in. So I always know what needs to be done. And then maybe about every 2 weeks or so, I'll go to the archive and put it in its more permanent place.
There you go, Franz. But for those important originals that you need, a good home filing service and a safe with no battery. Julia, speaking the minds of parents across the UAE and beyond, any advice for kids' toys, she's asking. We have a lot of Lego, which is just in one box that gets tipped on the floor every day. Julia, I know your pain. Organising kids' toys with kids in the house is impossible. So having done this before, when they're... Well, do you know what? Actually, what we've done recently is if they want a new toy and, you know, it's been earned and discussed and it's a valid purchase, it's a one in three out rule in our household. We're getting brutal with the kids. But Julia's question about Lego, any previous clients had the same struggle?
Oh, well, first, that's great about the one in three out. I completely admire that. That's a great...
In
a
theory.
Great hardcore way to go. Yeah. Yeah, it can be a little easier said than done. Sure, I get that. For Legos, when it comes to that, yeah, certainly that can get messy quickly. And I know a lot of people like to organize maybe by color or whatnot. Really, it's what's going to resonate with your child. And it's good to consider how they use them. So maybe if certain Legos are used for certain games or whatnot, you might sort them that way. Like, you know, castles or another one for construction or something like this. So in terms of organizing them in those ways, it's good to just have a conversation with your child about how do you use them, which basket should they go in.
Right, yeah, so rather than having one big box, then you've got to sort through every single time and then put the whole thing away every single time.
Right, exactly. You can just say, hey, which game are we going to play with the Legos? And you might be able to narrow it down a bit more.
Okay. And last question from Leonie saying, good timing. We're having a sort out this weekend. I wondered what your advice is reselling item. Where is best? Facebook, garage sale. It'll be some toys, clothes, books and some kitchen bits. Thank you.
Great. Yeah. Certainly, I think that the social media groups here are a great resource. There's plenty of people on there watching. I see loads of people on Facebook groups. Different expat communities are great because people are always coming and going, so there's a lot of interest there. So yeah, when it comes to any household items, I think that social media is certainly the way to go because when you get that person-to-person connection, mm-hmm. it can be a lot easier. But there are other areas. If you have some nicer items, maybe more luxury clothing, something like the Luxury Closet is a great resource because they can help you find and connect with someone based on, you know, what kind of price you're looking for.
And lastly, what's the best way of getting in touch with you, Celia, and finding out more about your services and seeing some of your work as well?
Sure, yeah. If you want to check out more about the services or contact us about a consultation, you can do that on our website, which is thesavvyspace.ae. But we're also on Instagram. So you can connect with us there. We like to post just various ideas about projects and insights. And also for those listening, we're offering a special promotion. So if you just mention that you heard us on the show or mention you, Helen, then you can get a 10% discount on First Room.
And then let us know the results of all of that hard work. So yeah, thank you so much for joining us from the Savvy Space. I'm going to go and get some labels sorted this weekend, I promise. Have a great one. Thank you so much.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Have you, like the rest of the world, been gripped by the absolute smash hit Netflix show Indian Matchmaking? You would not be alone, and we've talked about it a few times on the show, which has led to actually having a conversation right here, right now, with Amptu. She's on the line from India, where you'll be known for doing a bit of matchmaking in your time, Amptu. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Helen? How are you?
I'm well. It's so nice to talk to you, and I'm really intrigued to get a bit of background information.
I'm pleased that you allowed me to talk about my matchmaking.
Well, tell us.
I'll try to answer you.
How did you get started, Amptu? Tell us where it all began.
How I started, no?
Yes, please.
Yeah. Before 30 years, I'm talking about. My matchmaking is 30 years long. So we were the family of five sisters, and my sisters got married second, third, fourth. People were asking me, you follow me, no, my English?
Of course, yes.
You follow me?
Yes,
Helen?
Of course. Tell us.
My sisters, the people were asking me that you got a good match, and how did you get it? So it strike to my mind that let me help people in society to do matchmaking for them also. It is a good work. So I started, and randomly first was done. Nicely done it was. And then I started in a professional way, which I was not charging anything. Mm-hmm. It is my social work. Mm-hmm. I never charge anyone anything. Then my husband helped me, and we made a form, like a biodata.
Yes, like we saw on the show with Seema. So what kind of information was on the biodata form then?
In biodata, I was taking a name, birth date, height, education, complexion, choice, and other side, the mother's name, father's name, native, where they belong. And India, it is important. People talk about that, which native you belong. Then religious belief and brother, sister, how many married, what they are doing, education, how big they are, small they are, like
everything.
That. And their residential address.
And then you'd have information on lots of different people and start, and you must know as well, you know, different families and the values and how people would come
together. I was doing for my community, yeah? I was doing for my community, but globally also I was doing.
Really?
I'm a Bori Shiite, but I was doing globally also.
And how many couples do you think you've successfully introduced over
more
the last few decades?
1,000 plus.
No, 1,000 couples?
Maybe more.
Oh my goodness.
Plus.
You're good at this. Why do you think that this is a talent that you have? How do you think you're so successful, Amptu?
See, I'll tell you. In the beginning, when I did it, no, it was a matchmaking which way I used to, like Seema Tapari, I never going to go anybody's home. Mm-hmm. People were coming to my home on Sunday. I take a form, no? Form means biodata, I write. Then it will go to girls, will go to girls' file. Boys will go to boys' file. Then next day onwards, other 6 days, people will call me, mother will come, mother will call of any candidate. I'll say boy candidate and girl candidate. I'm calling them candidate. They will call me and then we discuss. And with intuition, I try to find out that which will match them. The boy picture is with me, that form is with me, so picture and biodata is with me. And with intuition and applying little mind, I will give some 2-3 suggestions to that candidate's mother. She will write down that. Then she will contact. I had given them already one paper in which a format was there. In that they record, they keep the record whom I have shown, whom I have given as a match. And then they call the other person, opposite candidate, and then they meet. If both the parents are ready, they exchange the biodata, and then they meet.
It's so interesting. Mm. Yes. How do you know when you see two people together for the first time, can you recognize that this is going to be a match, or can you get a sense that it's not going to be compatible?
Yeah, because I was filling the forms at that time only. When I write the biodata, I try to judge people's social status, their financial, their religious belief, their lifestyle, their personality, everything. I try to judge. And over a period of time, it becomes a habit and I become a master in that skill. By knowing talking with the people, I can make out. Their parents will also come with them, either mother or brother. So I can make out which social status they belong, no? I write down.
We've got your daughter on the line now. Tina is joining us. How are you, Tina?
I'm good, Helen. Hi, Mom. How are you?
Look at us. So we're having a little mother-daughter chat thousands of miles away. Tina, your mother was involved in your marriage. Can you tell us what that was like?
So funnily enough, while none of my friends want to believe that this is true, my mom did not arrange my match.
Oh.
It's just that over the years with networks, you know, this kind of came along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that her experience of matching all these other couples did help us in finding, not only finding suitable matches, Helen, but it's not an easy process not being, you know, conservative anymore, mm-hmm. or, you know, being a part of this modern world, Western world, having friends from the Western world. Actually going through the process of an arranged marriage was difficult. And I feel like Mom's experience really helped with clearing out miscommunications, mm-hmm. having patience. You know, patience is such a big part of the process because you're almost like dating, but it's no strings attached. The other person can kind of turn around and say no, even after you've met them 7 times, 8 times over a few months. And
wow.
It's almost like having your heart out there, but not, there's no attachment.
Well, no, that's right, because you know, everyone's there with the same intention. It's not like dating, you know, perhaps in the Western world where, you know, someone could go, well, I'm not really looking for anything serious. You know, both parties are in that scenario because ultimately marriage is the goal.
Fair enough.
Have you so you've watched Indian Matchmaking on Netflix then?
Yes, we have. Yeah.
What did you think of it?
You know, obviously it's a reality show,
mm-hmm.
so I don't think everything's as true as they, you know, say it is. There is a certain amount of drama added to it. But I did see some stark differences between how Mom did it versus, you know, what's shown on the show. And I think one of the big differences was that Mom had 2 young daughters herself. So she wasn't so judgmental of other people being matched,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, we were at home saying all those same things that the people who came to her said that, hey, you know, I want someone tall, I want someone educated, I don't, you know, this is how I feel about living with my in-laws or, you know, things of that sort. So it's the show is interesting and it's opened the eyes of the world to Indian matchmaking. But for us, this is just the fabric of our society.
It's what you grew up with. Can I ask you, there seemed to be a lot of criticism coming out from people who've watched the Indian matchmaking show on Netflix. What would you say to those people who are critical of the process?
Sometimes people are critical even. They believe in love marriage only. But over a period of time, with my experience, love marriage is not bad, but in the arranged marriage, parents' guidance and help and blessing and everything is there. They can search for the other candidate also, opposite partner whom they want to select for their son or daughter. That also helps. So arranged become more happy, less diverse cases. 1,000+ made matches now. Very few diverse. 3-4, hardly.
So have you ever met somebody or met a family and just thought, I'm not going to be able to help you as a candidate?
No.
Is there somebody for everybody?
Please repeat the question.
Has there ever been somebody that you thought you couldn't find a match for, that it would be impossible?
Yeah, sometimes I meet a person very different, very strong at it, very less adjustive, very much demanding. For them, I find it very difficult to find a match. But over a period of time, I do counseling also. Mm-hmm. Now, over 30 years of experience, I do counseling. Even I tell them why the marriage is needed in the society. What makes the society more strong with the help of marriage? Because in olden time, when before 30 years, people used to come and they hesitate. The boy and girl candidate did not come easily. Nowadays, when they came to know, I'm known as a Amtu Aunty from Santa Cruz, Mumbai. Like Seema Taparia from India, no, Amtu Aunty from Santa Cruz.
Seema from Mumbai.
I'm known in the youth. Yeah, in youth, I'm known like that. So nowadays, youth come on their own. They are calling me. They give me, call me. When you are giving me time, they are calling me like that. Now the trend has changed.
One of my favourite things about watching Indian matchmaking on Netflix was hearing the stories of the couples who had had arranged marriages and talking about their relationships. And I wondered if you could tell us about your own marriage.
Pardon?
Can you tell us about your own marriage? Were you an arranged marriage?
Me? Myself?
Yes. Yes,
myself?
You. Yes.
Mine was love marriage. It is funny, Helen. Mine was 1,000 marriages I did arrange, and mine was love marriage. But in that time also, in 1970s, people were not doing love marriage. So my parents, we were five sisters. So my parents say, being elder daughter, if you will do love marriage, what will happen to the other four? So she was, you know, I was pressurized. I was forced. Mm-hmm. My husband came with the proposal, but my mother said, send your parents and tell them to bring proposal. So, love come arranged marriage, I did it.
Tina, can I ask you?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit, how would you feel about your own children being maybe set up by your mum, or perhaps just involved in arranged marriages moving forward?
So, I have to say that growing up, I had a very different view of arranged marriages than, you know, say in my teenage years, compared to what I think about them now after having been through one. I truly believe that it's a process that helps you have a lot of similarities with your partner instantly. Mm-hmm. You automatically land up with similar cultures, similar outlooks in life. You know, it's like if you had a checklist of what you wanted in a partner, going down the arranged marriage route gives you 80% of that even before you have met somebody. Then, you know, there is a chance, of course, of attractive or, you know, mentally compatible, emotionally compatible. But it kind of gives you so much similar ground that I feel it made life easier for me.
I really liked what your mum said about having the support of your family behind you, which is really, yeah, really important. And you spoke earlier about, you know, how being around this growing up kind of, you know, kind of helped inform your decision. And I think that's such an interesting point. You know, we think a lot about what's on our wish list, and that might be height or car or job and all these kind of seemingly superficial things. But when we get down to actually what we need, and that could, yeah, be values, you know, kindness, intelligence, or whatever, mm-hmm, that might be, I feel like there is an awful lot of value that comes through from that. Amtu, yeah, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We have got some people who want to hear or to give you a bit of a message. Have a listen to this.
Hi, Amtu Aunty. This is Tariq.
And Zenobia. 8 years have passed since your phone call. A potential match for you came our way. Be it experience or intuition, your choice to pair us changed our lives. We often ask each other, where have you been all this time? But we know, as you say, timing is everything, and your timing was impeccable.
You matched us perfectly. We are so different but complement each other in so many ways. A thank you doesn't seem enough for the match you've made for us. We are forever grateful to you for introducing us, Amtu Aunty. Thank you.
Oh,
thank you.
Oh,
thank you.
And you have more fans.
Hello, I'm Mariam Sahirwala. Amtu aunty has helped me finding my life partner. She's a lady with a heart of gold, with all the effort she takes to match so lovingly. God bless her. Lots of love.
And lastly.
Hi, I'm Ali.
Hi, I'm Zara. Amtu aunty, we wanted to say thank you for helping us be together.
You're a very gifted matchmaker. You quickly matched our personalities and you knew why we would click.
Exactly. There is no doubt in our minds that we wouldn't be here enjoying our lives the way we are if it wasn't for you. I want to thank you for working so hard on our behalf.
So, Amtu aunty, thank you for making a difference in our lives, in our relationship. We will always be grateful and appreciate everything you have done for us.
You're awesome, Amtu aunty.
We love you.
Oh, there you go, Amtu.
My God, Ellen, all these people will come on the line that I never expect even.
Well, you've been a very big part of it.
Amtu aunty, thrilled.
Oh, I'm so, so pleased. Amtu, thank you for sharing your story this afternoon. And it's been a pleasure to speak to both you and Tina. And as we heard there, you've really changed the lives of, well, as you say, thousands of people over the last few years. Wishing you and your family all the very best.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.